Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
I'm not used to losing in Australian Open in second round. I mean, I've always played so well throughout the last 10 years. I've been, you know, I've won six titles here, and this court has been so nice to me. It's disappointing, but at the end of the day, I have to accept it.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport, who are the sole rights holders in the UK for television coverage of the first Grand Slam tournament of the year. My name is David Law, part of the BBC Radio 5 Live tennis team. Catherine Whittaker is here with me from Eurosport. And we join you from the commentary box courtside, where Serena Williams has just avoided the fate of Novak Djokovic, who went out earlier today in one of the most seismic shocks that we've had at this tournament in many, many years, perhaps ever at this particular tournament. We're waiting for Rafael Nadal to come out onto the court for the final night session match of the day. But Catherine, I mean, Dennis Istomin has had the 12 months from hell in many ways. He's ranked outside the world's top 100. He's barely won matches at times at a tour level. This was the second round. This was the six-time champion, six titles in 9 years. He hadn't lost this earlier to Slam for 9 years, 2008 in Merritt Safin and Wimbledon. It was hard to fathom, really, when it was going on. I mean, he was two sets to one up, but the whole match, that didn't look like Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, the last time I saw Dennis Istomin was Nottingham 2015, winning his very first ever ATP World Tour title. And now here he is having another major, major career highlight. Good on Dennis Istomin. It was hard to fathom. Yeah, it was hard to fathom from Novak Djokovic. Look, Dennis Istomin played really, really well, but there is no way he should have been challenging Novak Djokovic. I mean, even on his best day, he doesn't really have the game to challenge Novak Djokovic. It's just not a good matchup on paper, even on his best day. And I think, well, perhaps not today, but on a really frank day, he might admit to that himself. But yeah, the seismic ripples are still reverberating, aren't they, around here? It's difficult to sum up just how big a shock this is. I've been trying to think about whether it's as big a shock as what happened at Wimbledon. There's a couple of differences, one being that at Wimbledon it was over 2 days, so we almost had that overnight period to come to terms with the possibility that the world number one might lose. And secondly, I guess, you know, Wimbledon, he was in his absolute pomp. It was after he'd won the French Open. And yes, he was world number one. Here he's world number two. And had it not been for what happened in Doha, I would have found today easier to understand. Had it been sort of a continuation of what we saw from the end of last season, from what we saw in the World Tour Finals final against Andy Murray, it would have made more sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me is that we saw certainly the old Novak Djokovic in terms of spirit in Doha. And why couldn't we see that today? Because we didn't really see that today. How he lost, you know, it's a familiar story, isn't it? The plucky underdog challenges the top seed, one of the top seeds. But then as soon as the top seed gets a bit between his teeth and gets some momentum in his direction, as Djokovic did, winning the second and third sets, you think, oh, OK, no, this has been an exciting match. We're all very grateful for that, but normal service is resumed now. How he went on to win lose the fourth and fifth sets is very bizarre to me. I watched prepare yourself for some name dropping, but I did actually watch portions of the match, sat in between Boris Becker and Mats Wilander, and I found it highly surreal. I mean, I'm basically a tennis nerd, a tennis fan girl, and I was trying to play it very cool, just thinking, yeah, you know, this is a normal day for me. I'm watching Novak Djokovic between his former coach and. Yeah, Boris wasn't giving too much away. He wasn't, you know, letting it all go. He obviously still has a whole load of fondness for Novak Djokovic, wishes him well. I do, as much as there's stuff they've agreed not to say, for sure, I do believe that they've parted on basically good terms and there's definitely a fondness there. But, I mean, his basic assessment was he's just flat today. And both of them, these two greats of the game, didn't really have any more of a scientific explanation than that. It's weird, isn't it? Flat. That was sort of it, you know. And they were talking amongst themselves about, it's just awful when you come out and you're flat, isn't it? What are you supposed to do about it? And I'm thinking, surely you find a way to get yourself pumped up. But no, they were saying it's just one of those things that you just hope it doesn't happen on a day that's really, really important. Now, I do believe that had Djokovic of a year ago come out flat, he would have found a way to not be flat by the final point. That's the issue here. But yeah, it was. I can't believe it actually happened. Really, not that I thought that Novak Djokovic was nailed on to win this title, but of all the, you know, looking at his potential route through to the latter stages, of all the people you thought could possibly challenge him, nobody was looking at Dennis Istomin, were they?
No. I remember seeing Dennis Istomin walk out onto the court, and I remember thinking, oh, I hadn't even realised Djokovic was playing him. That's how little it had registered on my radar that this was a match coming up and that this was a threat. It wasn't a threat. There was no threat there, as far as I was concerned, for Novak Djokovic today. Well, I was absolutely wrong. First of all, have to pay enormous credit, I think, to Istomin, who played the match of his life, and he just didn't dip, he didn't blink. I think it's very easy to only analyse why wasn't Djokovic like Djokovic normally is, and that's obviously the biggest storyline here, and it's my first instinct is Djokovic of a year ago doesn't lose that match, no matter what Istomin does, and I still believe that. However, you know, the guy played fabulously well, and you know, he's got that with him for the rest of rest of his life. Nobody will ever be able to take that moment away from him. But trying to get to the bottom of what is wrong with Novak Djokovic is, we will never do it. And he's not telling us. And maybe he doesn't even know. But there's something wrong with him. I mean, he's not, this guy is not right at the moment. I mean, why isn't he at the level he was a year ago? It happens. Bjorn Borg walked out of the 1981 US Open final, never won another Grand Slam tournament, basically retired. You know, Roger Federer has gone through that awful spell around 2013, 2014, when he was losing to all sorts of people. Nadal, over the last 2 years, has lost the confidence with the forehand. Andy Murray, after the 2013 Wimbledon, okay, he had the back surgery, but he lacked something for a while. There was not quite the same degree of fight. I think it's so stark to see a guy win four Grand Slam titles in a row and look a year ago like he just couldn't be beaten. We remember us doing a podcast. How long can he go unbeaten for unless somebody's injured, and unless he gets injured, and we are still, I'm pretty bereft, really. I mean, other than to say, I just think he's lost the edge, because how many times can you go into the reserves and when you've dug deep all these times and there isn't the same cause for him? He's reached all the peaks.
Well, one of the things that Mats Wilander said this afternoon that really, really stuck with me. He has, since that match, said on air that he fears that Djokovic might not now get back to where he was. He's not by any means definitely predicting that, but he has significant fears that that might not happen. And it's interesting. He said he just can't keep up the intensity. And then he said he's not naturally like that. He's not naturally that intense and that focus. And that I found that really interesting because we took it so much for granted, didn't we? That he would just win anything and everything, and it would ever be thus, and that he sort of made it look so easy and so like he was just locked into that zone. You couldn't imagine him coming out of it. And maybe he was just doing a Joe Konta all along. We talk a lot about how Joe Konta's found this formula to make herself this person that wins tennis matches, and it might mean she's not quite able to be herself all the time, but it works for her on a tennis court. Maybe Djokovic has been doing that all along and it's not really him, and he's now having to let it go a bit because you can't keep up a facade forever.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. May well be. Well, I asked the question on social media at Tennis Podcast on Twitter. What do you think's happened to Novak Djokovic? Jakey says age, regression to the mean, and having accomplished his biggest goals. AB Tennis says he's run out of steam. He's achieved so much, and you can't keep that intensity up forever. And I think some of these points are valid. They're pretty much tally with what we're saying. June says I think he's mentally exhausted. Maybe this is it. Maybe he just needs a break. We just don't know.
He is mentally exhausted. I fully buy that as a partial explanation, but he should be good enough at forehands and backhands for that to carry him through those sorts of matches, even when he is mentally exhausted. You know, I can understand him not being at his best as a result of slight burnout, but that's not a full explanation. You know, the backhand disappeared for that for a set and a half at the start, then the forehand disappeared. I do think, as a side point, there are issues with the speed of the court this year. Boris Becker said he thinks the outside courts here, whether it's the courts themselves or the balls, which are different this year, are playing faster than any court he has ever seen. And at the time that he was making those comments, the schedule for tomorrow came out and we saw Andy Murray is playing on High Sense Arena, and I saw your subsequent tweets about that saying you think, and I entirely agree with you here, they said to Andy Murray, most likely, we've got to put Stan Rod Laver Arena, because we haven't done that yet, and he's a former champion. Federer Burdick, of course, that's the night match. Rod Laver Arena, nailed on. So, Andy, you've got the choice of Margaret Court or Huijsens. And the assessment of two multiple Grand Slam champions was likely that Huijsens is a little bit slower, and maybe he wanted to counteract these slightly new conditions that lots of players seem to be struggling to adjust to this year.
Yeah, very interesting. I think that's going to be fascinating to see how Andy Murray goes against Sam Querrey, who incidentally was part of a doubles team that beat the defending champions Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez. Sam Querrey could do the Murray double in 2 days. Imagine that. He completely wipes out the face of the Murray family from the tournament in the space of a couple of days. Well, that's tomorrow. We'll find out how that goes. Just a word on another big shock today. Agnieszka Radwańska has gone out. Almost a footnote, really, given the shock of Djokovic. But she went out tamely. I mean, she lost straightforwardly to Mirjana Lucic. I mean, a wonderful story for Lucic Baroni, because she was a teenager who came on the scene and then had all sorts of trials and tribulations in her personal life and didn't play for so long. And she's back and she's in her 30s and she's just registered the most enormous win. So congratulations to her. But Radwanska's wait for a title, I mean, even a meaningful run here goes on.
Yeah, that's and with greatest respect to Lucic Baroni, who is a fantastic story, a fantastic human story. That's an awful loss for Agnieszka Radwanska. Those are usually the sorts of players that she laps up, you know, the tall, poorer movers that she can slice and dice around the court. And I must confess, I haven't seen any of the match. I just saw the scoreline unfolding and thought, what on earth is going on here? This should have been straightforward for you. Yeah, it's funny how many people are talking about Jo Konta as a favourite for the title. I think were it not for her horror draw, she would be a real, real favourite for the title. It's only the fact of Serena Williams standing in her way that makes her not one of the top two or three.
Yeah, well, she was a comfortable winner today against the prodigiously talented Naomi Osaka of Japan, the teenager. And Konta now plays Caroline Wozniacki, who looked very good today against Donna Vekic. But I think if you were to look at the matchup of Wozniacki and Konta, and even Konta against Sibulkova, I would favour Konta to win both matches individually. It's just that, is there going to be an accumulative effect, I wonder?
For Jo Konta, I don't think so. I think she looks magnificent. I see all the hallmarks of a top, top tennis player in her now. She's able to be clinical in a way that I've never seen. You know, Naomi Osaka, yes, she's young, doesn't have the experience, would have been nervous today, but she's got big weapons that we just didn't see today, because Jo Konta didn't give her a chance to get any kind of strike in. You know, she was just so airtight. It was really impressive. She is incredibly, seems even fitter than she was last year, which I didn't really think was possible. She is such a lean, mean machine. And there's such a steel in her eye. I know that's completely unscientific, saying there's a steel in someone's eye, but she thinks she can win this title. And I think for her, the fact that she's got this awful draw takes the pressure off a bit, maybe, just a little bit.
Well, she always does talk, as any top player does, about just taking it one at a time. And I think that's the only way you can play it when you've got a former world number one in the third round. So we will see how she goes. She's the only bit of British success today because, as I mentioned, Jamie Murray lost. And also Kyle Edmund, a really disappointing defeat for him. Straight sets against Pablo Carreño Busta. And then defeat, heartbreak for Heather Watson, who had 5 match points today against Jennifer Brady and was in charge of that match and didn't win it. I mean, huge credit to Brady for coming back and winning that. She sounds like a bright spark, but that's a crushing blow.
Yes, myself and the British Eurosport team are concerned that we might have jinxed Heather Watson on every single one of those match points, because we were hovering courtside. It was on one of the outside courts, and we have to be there to do an immediate, what we call a flash interview if she wins, which means an immediate reaction on court interview. And every time she went match point up, we were there hovering, and every time it didn't happen. And actually on the final match point she had, we decided we would step back and not, and it's still. So maybe it wasn't our fault after all.
I don't think it was. But anyway, shame for her. But good win, as we said, for Johanna Konta. She goes onwards. Serena Williams, victorious this evening. We've just seen her depart the Rod Laver Arena from our position. We are literally sitting a couple of metres. I can almost touch the centre service line judge, court level, just behind Marcus Baghdatis, who's returning the serve of Rafael Nadal here. We'll bring you that result at the end of the show. But the victory for Serena Williams is a good one against Lucy Safarova. She's beaten her in straight sets. That's a really tough test for Serena Williams so early on in a tournament to be backed up against Bencic, who's a top player in when she's at her best, and then Lucy Safarova. She's beaten them both in straight sets. Catherine, for Eurosport, has been speaking to Patrick Mouratoglou, Serena Williams' long-time coach now, and she asked him, given that Serena Williams hasn't played many matches of late, whether she's perhaps short of match practice.
Definitely. I think it's very important to play matches. Like this job is about being competitive in the matches. And the less you play, the less you can feel comfortable on the court. So, I mean, obviously Serena has much more experience than any other player on tour. She's played, I don't know how many matches in her career, so she needs that less than others, but still, It's kind of a disadvantage, and I think it's a good thing that she has tough matches at the start of this tournament, because it's going to help her get more rhythm and more feeling for the matches.
In terms of the tournament as a whole, who does Serena see as her main rivals, her main contenders? Because it's such a shifting landscape in women's tennis at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. To be honest, she doesn't look at people as people who can beat her, and I like it. She always thinks it's up to her, and I have to agree with that. When Serena's at her best, I don't think anyone can beat her, but she has to be at her best, so we mostly work on her, how to get her to her best level on every aspect of her game, whether it's the technical, the physical, the mental side, all of that. I can answer that question if you want. It's not Serena's point of view, it's more mine. I think that the ones that we expect to be the most dangerous, who are maybe Kerber, Muguruza, all those players, I don't think they play their best tennis at the moment. I think Pliskova is playing really well from what I've seen in the last matches. And Konta. Konta was very impressive in Sydney. I think those two are in a great shape and might be the most dangerous ones in that tournament.
Just finally, Patrick, we've heard Serena talk a lot, particularly in the last couple of years, about pressure. We know she wants to get number 23. How all-consuming is that for her? Is she desperate? Is she always thinking about number 23?
Pressure is something that everyone talks about, but nobody knows what it is. Because if you have not experienced that, you have no idea. You can ask Kerber what she thinks about it at the moment. And it's not the same pressure, but the pressure of being number one and supposedly the best and supposedly the one who is not allowed to lose a match. Ask also Andy. If you saw his first match here, he was not feeling really comfortable. Yesterday was better. So and for Serena, the pressure is like another level. So, I mean, she doesn't think about 23 every day. Of course not. But she feels that pressure. I think she's great to deal with pressure. She showed it all her career. It's a pressure that is at a different level at the moment, but she's getting used to. She's gonna find a way, as is she always done in her career. I just don't think she should focus too much on the 23 number. I think what is important is that she focused on her own record and set the Serena record. If it's 23, it's 23. If it's 30, it'll be fine.
Certainly will be fine, Patrick. Fascinating to get your thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So that's Catherine talking to Patrick Mouratoglou. What did you make of his state of mind? He seems pretty excited about what's to come.
He's so remarkably open. It's incredible, given how close Serena Williams is and how little she wants to give away. It's almost like she allows him to be her public face. And she says, Patrick, you give away whatever you want. And he's a fascinating interview. Luckily, he's on the Eurosport team, so we should get to speak to him and get his insights a few times throughout the fortnight.
Excellent, excellent. Here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with Eurosport. You see, this is the benefit that we get. Now, Catherine's got to go. So I've got to talk to the Five Live audience, give them an update on the Nadal-Baghdatis match. Let's just have a very quick look at tomorrow's matches, Catherine. Starts with Eugenie Bouchon against Coco Vandeweghe on the Rod Laver Arena, then Kerber against Kristina Pliskova. Tell you what, that'll be interesting.
I think Kirby's going to lose that. I think Bouchard's going to win. I think Kirby's going to lose.
Blimey.
Yeah, I'm being punchy because you've got to get on the radio. After that, Wawrinka against Trojki, I think Wawrinka's going to win. Then night session, Barty against Bartel, I think Barty's going to win. And Burdick against Federer, I think Federer's going to win. But Simon Briggs thinks Burdick's going to win.
He's been looking a bit ropey, old Federer, hasn't he? But, you know.
Old Federer?
Well, he is a bit old, isn't he? Let's be honest. I mean, he's 35 now. You know, he's ancient. On the Margaret Court Arena, it's Svitolina Pavlyuchenkova. Then it's Songa against Sock. That's interesting, isn't it?
Winner to maybe play Dan Evans.
Oh, now we're talking. Yeah, Dan Evans is going to be up on the Hisense Arena straight after Andy Murray. So Andy Murray's second on Hisense Arena, which is the third major court here. So we reckon that'll be about 3 o'clock in the morning UK time, around about 2 o'clock local time in the afternoon on in Melbourne. Andy Murray, you'll be able to watch that, of course, on Eurosport. You'll be able to listen to it on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra. Then it's Bernard Tomic against Dan Evans. What's going to happen in that?
I think Evo's going to win. I do.
So do I. It's very exciting, isn't it, everybody? Now, Catherine's got to go. I've got to go on the radio. Nadal against Baghdatis at the moment. I'll tell you how that's going to go and how that has gone in just a few minutes. Well, he looks great, Nadal. It took him a bit longer than a couple of minutes, maybe just over 2 hours. But goodness me, Marcus Baghdatis, try as he might, he strained every sinew. He had his little daughter watching and his wife, and he was going for it. But Nadal was really good tonight. I think he is dangerous. He's got a face, though, next round, Alexander Zverev, who also looks really good. So that is going to be one heck of a clash. I don't know. I think Nadal's going all the way. I do. I think he's going all the way to the final. I think he's going to meet Murray in the final now. Goodness me. Imagine that. Anyway, we will find out. He's already in his press conference. He wants an early night. I wouldn't mind an early night as well. We'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.